What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I got a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented producer, songwriter, and he's also a platinum-selling artist himself. He has produced tracks for Mary J. Blige, Christina Aguilera, the Pussycat Dolls, and 50 Cent. Please put your hands together and welcome producer, songwriter, and artist, Kwame.
That's right. Put your hands, your toes, everything together. Put them up. What's good?
Hey, what's happening, Kwame?
Ain't nothing, man. I'm out here in New Jersey, snowed in. It looks like if anybody's seen the movie The Shining, it looks like that outside.
Oh, man. All work and no play. Make Jackson dull, boy.
Yes. Extra crazy out here.
Oh, man. Tell me about it. I'm in Minnesota, man, so I'm no stranger to snow.
Oh, so yeah. You know what it is.
Oh, no doubt, man. Man, before we start and get into the questions, Kwame, man, I just got to take my hat off to you, man. As a fan, as you know, as you being an artist, man, back in the late 80s and early 90s, and now merging into the production game, dude. I mean, it's just like, man, you got so many hats, man. You're so talented and just really making a lot of noise, man. I appreciate that, man. From one producer
to
another.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Well, basically, I started, I guess, as an artist and a producer at the same time when I was much younger, when I was around 14, 15 years old. And I didn't understand necessarily what a producer was, but I just knew that my favorite artists at the time growing up were cats like Prince, were Stevie Wonder. You know, those are like my top two favorite artists. So when I would look at albums, I would always read the liner notes on albums and everything, and I would look at these albums, it always would say produced, written, composed, and arranged by Prince or Stevie Wonder. So I'm like, okay, well, these are the dudes that I look up to. Maybe I could do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, it just all turned into, well, if I got these rhymes in my head, if I got these songs in my head, I guess I got to come up with the music also. And it just became a natural progression. As I was coming up as an artist, you know, I came up as a producer at the same time. You know, I was under this producer, Herbie Lovebug, from back, you know, he created Salt and Pepper and Kid and Play, and I was up under Herbie, but, you know, I sat around and waited for him to make beats and songs for me, and he was so busy with his schedule with Salt and Pepper and Kid and Play and Dane and all those artists that he had, he didn't really have time for what I was trying to do. So I ended up going into the studio and doing it myself. So it turned into, you know, me being a producer kind of turned into, you know, itself. It wasn't anything that I was setting out to do. I just thought it was a natural part of what I was doing.
Right. Oh, definitely, man. I hear you there. Now, as far as keyboard playing, man, I mean, did you have a background in keyboard playing too, or did you pick this up along the way as well?
Well, you know, for me, I was always a musical person. You know, when I was a kid, I used to play the drums. I used to play the piano. I used to have to go to piano class and do piano recitals and everything. And I tell you now, I've never been more nervous. I could be on stage in front of 100,000 people and not be nervous. But being at a piano recital in front of your parents and like 20 other people has got to be the most nervous thing that I've ever done in my life, ever, ever, ever. So being a kid doing that, you know, that kind of helped me, you know, learn the fundamentals of a keyboard player. I never consider myself a great keyboard player or, like, I don't even know what kind of keyboard player I am. I just know that whatever melody I hear in my head, I can play it and get it done when it comes to making a song. And so I never jumped up and down. I was like, yeah, I'm this keyboard player. But the use of keyboards have been a great part of my tracks. Like, I'm more into, you know, I'm not really, I enjoy the synth sounds and stuff like that, but the sounds that really draw me are more the acoustic or the organic sounds, like anything organ generated, anything like pure piano generated, those things, you know, really, really, really help me out when I create tracks and stuff like that.
Right. No, I hear you there, man. And, you know, talking about, you know, it sounds like it's going into more of like your signature style, man. You know, what would you define your sonic signature, man? What's Kwame's sonic signature in production? I mean, everyone's got the sense. You're leaning towards the more organic sound. Is there anything else that you really kind of focus in on every track that you do that kind of gives that stamp, that Kwame stamp of sonic signature that you have?
The drums got to knock. No matter what it is, it could be a ballad. My drums have to beat you in the brains. That's the thing that matters the most to me. You know, because, you know, I could do pop, I could do R&B, but at the end of the day, I'm hip hop. And I always put, it's like seasoning in food. It's like if you cook Cajun food, you're always going to throw that seasoning in there to let people know where it's from, or if it's, you know, you know what I'm saying. So it's basically that. It's like first and foremost, it has to be the drums. Then after that, you know, the sky's the limit from there, because it's like it's whatever zone that I'm in. You know, it could be whatever, but I think at the end of the day, it's always going to be the drums. It's live strings, and there's always going to be some kind of piano element in it. Like, those are my main three, the drums, live strings, and live orchestration, and piano. Like, I gotta have those. I'm not going to say I'm going to put it in every single record I do, but, you know, those are my staples.
Right. Now, let's back up a little bit, Kwame, man. Let's talk about just some basic signal chains that you process your drums with. I mean, you know, a lot of guys just leave everything flat and, you know, don't really touch it up, man. But to really thicken your sound, and I've heard a lot of the tracks that you produce, is there any type of signal processing you do on your kicks, snares? I mean, if you're using outboard gear like pre's or EQs, what are you using these days on that process?
You know what? One thing, I never try to rely on a whole bunch of outboard gear or equipment or anything like that. Everything is based on the pure drum sound that I create. You know, I try not to use, I definitely try my best to not use pre-set kits that are in keyboards and stuff like that, because the time, my era that I grew up in, we didn't have that. If you had, you either had a drum machine. If you didn't have a drum machine, you had to sit, go through records and find hot kicks, hot snares, and sample them and tweak them out to the way that you like them to sound. And I never left that. A lot of people get spoiled at the fact that you get a keyboard and it has great drum sounds in it. So that means that if you get that keyboard, a million other dudes can get that same keyboard and use those same sounds. So I've never laid on any of those presets just off of that case alone. And then after that, you know, like my stuff, I try not to keep it too complicated. You know, I run my stuff through, my trusty old Mackie 24/8 board. That, to me, I love the EQs on the board. I run each sound that I have, you know, I have 48, you know, 40, I have a 24/8 and an extension, another 24 track extension. So it's 48 channels that I run each and every individual sound that I use on. And I, you know, I pretty much mix as I create. So I don't, you know, I don't put too much into, you know, too much outboard stuff into the drums and all that kind of stuff, because the organic sounds that I have that knock that I need already. And because I want it to be able, I want the process to be as fast as possible, because I want to take more time creating than sitting in tweaking sounds and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, just as I lay my sounds out per channel, I just, you know, it just comes out the way I need it to come out. I don't, you know, but if I had to, pick any kind of outboard gear that I love. I love Tube Techs. I love Pole Techs. I love to run my kicks through some Pole Techs or Tube Techs and just tweak them out that way, compress them and or EQ them so they can really hit hard. But a lot of times I'll go to that stage when somebody buys a track and then I go in and I mix a record for real, and just enhance what's already there. But a lot of times I don't really need to do that.
Right. No, man, that's definitely a good way to do it, man. I was talking to Easy Mo B, man, a while back, hip-hop producer Easy Mo B, man, and he's still...
Yeah, I know him well.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, he's talked a lot about, man, he's still gravitating to his vinyls. I mean, all of his drums that he does, he said he still pulls it off the vinyls. And, you know, like I said, there's so many manufacturers out there that are providing sounds, but I just feel like if you really want to develop your own sound, you got to start digging and really finding the kicks and snares that no one's using. Just like you say, you don't want repeats and replications of your production out there because you guys are still using Motifs and, you know, Tritons to track your kicks and snares on. It's predictable.
Well, you know what, though? Sometimes if you hear, like, there have been times I've heard real good kicks and snares off of certain keyboards and stuff like that, and what I would do... Honestly, I'll sample them off the keyboard, and how I usually do is I lay them. None of my kicks are just a one kick. None of my snares is just one snare. So by mixing other snares that I have and other kicks that I have into something that's pre-manufactured, I still develop, you know, I'll do that and then resample it, and then it's my own kick. So, you know, I'm not going to just stick to one way or a way that I used to do it as a kid. That's like almost saying, well, you know what? I grew up on rotary phone, so I'm never going to give up my rotary phone. Right. Definitely not going to do that. But I still, there's a certain psychology into your drum sounds. And I think that, you know, as a producer, and there's no... That's the funny thing about producing and using sounds. There's no strict method or set way to do it. You know, every producer, I don't know any producer, and I'm, you know, naming, say, all the what people consider the big producers, none of them do it the same way.
Right, right.
Or every producer I meet, nobody makes their music the same way.
Right, we're not supposed to anyways, man. You know what I mean?
I mean,
that's just the freedom of expression at that point, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's like you could put 10 guitar players up to next to each other and they don't play the guitar the same way. So, you know, that's the beauty in it.
Right. You know, Kwame, I saw an interview with you, a televised interview you did, man, a couple of years ago. And, you know, they were going through your K1 studios, man. And, man, I just saw the vintage analog synthesizer you had there, man. It was just like a museum. I mean, you had the Rolands, you had the Mini Moves. I mean, do you still keep that things in your arsenal, or are you kind of converting to...
Definitely. It's weird because, you know, that's the one thing about the newer keyboards. You could pretty much order, or your VSTs, you could pretty much mimic a lot of those sounds that you have in with those vintage keyboards. But at the end of the day, I think it's more of a comfort zone to know that you actually have it.
Right.
Like, I have a million keyboards with 808 sounds, but there's nothing like showing somebody an 808. Like, yo, this is an 808.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? or a Mini Moog or Arc 2600. It's, you know, it's all Fairlight. It's all these different type of keyboards that, yeah, I could use them, and it may take hours just to get them to sound right. Half of them don't stay on tune, but it's the fact that you have them. And I'm also, like, I'm a pack rat, so I collect a lot of things, and one of the things I collect is vintage keys, vintage drum machines, just to say I have it.
Right.
And I may never use them. I have keyboards that I bought them, they're in the case, they've never left the case, they probably won't leave the case until I get a big enough facility where, because to me, they're works of art, and I would want to display them like a museum. If I could, I would love to get, you know, if I was really crazy with it, I would love to rebuild a state-of-the-art studio from the 70s and rebuild a state-of-the-art studio from the 60s just so, and one from the 80s, so you know how so you can recreate certain sounds and certain vibes with what you have. But, you know, that's wishful thinking right there.
Right. No, I hear you, though, man. But, you know, I think it's important, too, is, like, I've been playing keyboard since the 80s, man. You know, we both come from the same era of music. And, you know, I just feel like as not an older producer, but like that middle-aged producer, you know, like we're in our 30s, man, and I think a lot of these young guys don't have the experience and the hands-on experience with some of these outboard gears. I mean, I just think it really takes your mind to another level when you actually start turning some real knobs on a board, really searching for sounds and really creating. And I mean, you could do it with software too, but it's just you miss the color, you just miss a lot of the old school feel, I think, where it really leads over to the engineering side of it.
You're right, but think about this. When we were young, or when we were younger, and we were into keyboards, 9 times out of 10, we were into some vintage synthesizers that were before our time.
Yeah.
You know, like, for me, the ARP is one of my favorite synthesizers, but that was a synthesizer from 71, 72, 73.
Right.
I wasn't playing any keyboards during in 72. You know what I'm saying? So if me as a teenager is interested in those type of keyboards, I would believe that even a younger producer, if they're really about their game, they're going to go back and they're going to be interested and they're going to get into it just like we did, you know, or just like how we research older records or we dig in the crates and do all that. I'm pretty sure the better of the younger producers do the same thing, because at the end of the day, when you're really about your music, you do what it takes to excel in your music. And it also takes producers of a certain age to talk to younger producers and at least put them up on the game and then let them choose for themselves whether they want to do it. Because, you know, think about it. A new cat may say, well, I got everything in Logic. Why do I have to go do that? And they could be right.
Right.
You know, and that's their prerogative. They could just go and do whatever. For me, nah, I can't do it. But right. I'm never gonna shit on a kid that wants to do it their way. Because as long as the music comes out hot, you know,
right.
What does it really?
Yeah, it's hard to not give. If it's good work, man, it's going to speak for itself. And like you mentioned earlier, man, there's not a right or wrong way in putting tracks together. It's just really enhancing your knowledge for further sessions and projects down the road. You got something else to fall back on and maybe you have to get outside the box a little bit. Yeah, so I definitely agree with you there, man. You know, you talk a lot about your thick sound, Kwame, and, you know, to me, I think a lot of mistakes that younger producers and anybody new coming into the game is having issues with is making a mix translate well to other speakers and other systems in your car and headphones. You know, I talk about a lot of monitors a lot, man, like near field monitors and things, you know, if you're not really in an acoustic treated room, what kind of monitors are you really monitoring your sound and, you know, are they translating well? Is there any other techniques that you do to make your mixes translate well on other systems?
Well, what I do, I do a series of things. I have, you know, in my room, I have, first of all, I don't go all crazy with very expensive monitors, because 99.9% of the time, nobody's going to listen to the music on those kind of speakers at all. Mm. So a lot of times people spend tens of thousands of dollars on monitors and they'll get this perfect sound in their room, and the average listener won't know or won't care to know what you put into that sound. So, excuse me, I try to keep my I try to keep my monitoring system pretty average. Like, I keep a pair of Tannoy System 1200s for my big monitors. I use anything between, I have several monitors. So it's like from NS10s to, I have a new pair of Yamahas. Honestly, I don't even know the name of them things.
Are they ones that look like NS10?
Yeah, I think they're the next generation of NS10s. Yeah, I honestly don't know the name of them.
No, I got
Mackie, sometimes I use Mackies, but they can be kind of bottom heavy at times. I like Genelex, but lately I've been leaning on the newer Yamahas that I have. And after that, I have a average Altec Lansing radio that after I do all that other stuff, I play it through that, just some normal computer speakers, and then I put it in the car and drive around and listen to it in the car. Like, I go through, and I'll maybe play it on another inexpensive type of speaker system. Once I put it to CD, I listen to it and all different things. But at the end of the day, the final listen comes from how it sounds in my computer. And the only reason why I say that is because 99% of the time nowadays, everybody's first listen to a record is going to be out of their computer sneakers. Mm-hmm. And in my line of work, it's do or die if it doesn't sound good the first time somebody hears it out of their computer. If I send a record to an artist, if I send a record to an A&R, guaranteed they're listening to it on their Mac laptop first.
Right.
And it won't even hit a big speaker. It won't hit a studio. It won't hit anything until they listen to it 100 times on their laptop and their laptop headphones. And it's a shame that that's that way, but it is what it is. And so I got to make sure that everything sounds so accurate that you can almost feel bass coming out of your laptop. You can hear every nuance of the track coming out of the laptop. Because that's what's going to make people say, I got to hear this loud.
Right.
Let me put it in these monitors. Let me take it to the studio.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, even like you said, over the last years, man, just because music is really on the go now with the iPods and the MP3 players and, you know, everyone's on the go. And, you know, you're almost mixing for these iPods versus, you know, like your home stereo. It's like, man, I don't know anyone has got a home stereo in their house too much. You know what I mean? Everyone's got their iPods, their iPod.
Yeah, it's sessions. Like, the iPods, the laptops, they compress your records for you. And it's ready to go. But, you know, I think a lot of people used to have that debate, digital over analog, and, you know, what's the best thing. But at the end of the day, you're going to make music for two people. You're going to either make music for yourself, or you're going to make music for people to buy. And if you're going to make a product for people to buy, you got to package the product in the type of packaging that people are going to want to put their money into. And, you know, you do what you have to do to make your minor changes and enhance that product. You know, don't stay in a box. But at the end of the day, you know, it's like making records is like working at McDonald's. You know, there's only certain how many ways you're going to package a Big Mac. You're not going to sell a Big Mac on a golden plate with diamond forks and knives and
right.
Sell it for $100. Nobody's going to buy it. So you have to, you know, you got to figure out the way of packaging your stuff, but also making it good to the ears and quality music and getting it out there.
Definitely. You know, that's kind of leading to the next question I want to ask you, man. I want to talk a little bit about you, about the roles and different roles of producers, man. I mean, nowadays, there's trackers, there's beat makers out there, man. There's guys who compose their original compositions. But oftentimes, man, I'm approached with projects where the song is kind of already started from a songwriter or from another group in the group. And, you know, they'll present a song to me and I really got to finish the song for them. And, you know, without starting fresh my own compositions, how many times you get these type of projects where people bring songs to you and really want your judgment, really put the finishing touches and kind of put the pieces together to form that puzzle?
I don't get projects like that. But at the end of the day, the original role of a producer is pretty much that. Like, if you have a guy like, say, Sir George Martin, who produced the Beatles, yeah, the Beatles as a group came up with their music and wrote their songs, but without George Martin's guidance, the songs wouldn't have never came out the way they did. And or you have all these great musicians that worked with Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson, but Quincy had the ear to make sure that the compositions that they were putting together were laid down and executed the right way. And like a movie director doesn't necessarily write the script. A movie director doesn't necessarily act in the movie, but they know how to direct the script and the actors to get the right product. And that is the essential role of a producer. It's only in hip hop where people confuse a producer as the person who actually makes the beat and composes the music. And so it gets kind of confused, because if you take it into any other genre of music, that's not necessarily what the producer does at all. So if, you know, in speaking in terms of just pretty much black music, hip hop and R&B and stuff like that, and speaking in those terms, you know, my argument, and it's safe to say it's an argument, my argument is that with mainstream music, especially in hip hop and R&B, it's so processed that the labels and the artists and the powers that be very rarely allow a producer to be a producer. It's like, okay, send me the beat, thank you.
Right.
And then we'll give you production credit. And you never get a chance to know if that person actually has the qualifications of being a producer. You can make the greatest music in the world. That does not necessarily mean that you're a good producer. Right. Because just because you made a hot beat, making a hot beat and making a hot song are two different things.
Apples and oranges.
And I know cats, I know cats that make the hottest beats ever can't make a hot song to save their life.
Right.
So it's like, you know, fortunately for me sometimes, and you know, as much as I've done as a producer and as many records as I've sold, every time I do a record, it becomes a constant fight for me to be a producer. Because the first thing they'll say is, send me the track. And that's not how I work. You know, I'll make the track, but my tracks come with ideas. My tracks come with hooks. My tracks, it's more to it than just me sending a track. So for the most part, I would say 90% of the time, once I make a track, I usually make a track in front of the artist based on the idea, and we create a song from the ground up. And that's usually how my records come out. You know, there's small percentages of times where artists will say, send me some tracks. And then I'll send a track, and they'll pick a track, and they'll send back a record. And, you know, I'll definitely do my critiquing and want to change things here and there and get things changed. But I don't really like working that way. And I think you're hindering the creative process when you do that. You know, a lot of people do it because of time and money constraints. And I understand that. But at the end of the day, if you look at the history of music, the best records that are done with the musician, the producer, and the artist in one room making a great record. And so, you know, I hope I answered your question, but...
No, I totally agree, man. You know, because I talk a lot about the artist development between the producer and the artist. And, you know, having that relationship between the two, to me, I feel it's essential to have, man. Because, yeah, you're submitting out tracks, but it's like, man, I mean, I'm just giving you good music, but is it necessarily fitting that artist? You know what I mean? I wish I had more time to really spend with him, sit with pen and paper, go over the melodies, really build a song around that artist, and, you know, just kind of making a revolving door of tracks. So, yeah, I agree with you, man. There's a lot of things that are missed in the process by doing it that way.
Yeah, think about it. If you sit there and you make a bunch of tracks. Like right now, I'm working on T.I., right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here, I'm taking a break from doing this to have this conversation. And I'm sitting here, I'm making this music that I'm going to sit with T.I. and play these records. But I gotta almost be like a psychic because, excuse me, until I get the chance to actually make something from scratch, which I probably will do as well, I gotta assume this is what he's gonna want to listen to. I gotta assume that this is what he's gonna want to rap over.
Right.
And, but in the ideal situation, I wouldn't make any tracks. I would either go to where he is or he'd go to where I am, and we sit down and we'd make stuff from scratch. That's in the ideal, perfect world. And, you know, everybody knows that this world isn't ideal and perfect, so you have to go through the motions that you go through. And I guess it depends on the type of producer. You know, if you hit it out the park or not by doing that. But, you know, it's not as simple. Like I said, it's not as simple as saying, oh, I got some good tracks.
No, I agree, man.
That's almost half the battle.
Yeah. You know, you got your production label, Kwame, and you also got a killer studio, man, K1 Studios. Talk a little bit about your new label that you just released and your new artist, man, that you're releasing under that new label.
The name of the label is called Make Noise. And basically, Make Noise is what I like to call it a boutique label, not necessarily an indie label, but a boutique label. And I call it that is because as a producer, yeah, excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, but as a producer, a lot of times you're at the mercy of a record label. You know, I'm not going to ever claim that I think that I know it all because I learn stuff new every day. But at the end of the day, I think you start to get an idea of what would work and what wouldn't work. It's like a crapshoot. You can submit these records, you can record these records, and for whatever reason, a lot of times political, a label can go, nah, we're not going to use that. Nah, this is not the right thing. And you're stuck with good material just in the wind. So for me doing this for over 20 years, I'm like, okay, I've spent literally 20 years allowing people that I don't even know to determine how far I'm going to get in this business of music. So I said, now is the perfect time with the internet, with technology going the way it's going. No musician should have to look for a hookup anymore. No musician should have to look for a handout or a reach back, because you could pretty much do whatever. If you have your equipment and you're able to record something, you could do everything on your own. You can record a record on your own. You can sell it. You can promote it. You can get it out there. You can make a video. You could put things on YouTube. You could do whatever you got to do on your own. up to a certain point. And it's more than any independent artist ever had was able to do in the history of music. So for me, I said, why not take advantage of that? Why sit there and wait for a label to pick a record or make this a single or put this on the album or not put it on the album, pay me my fee, when I, like other people, we could just do it ourselves? And that was the whole purpose behind making this label called Make Noise. And the first artist on the label, It just happened organically. He's an artist that I have named Beyond Belief. And I've been working with him for 7 years.
Wow.
Almost 8 years. And we make this music, and I went the route of taking it to labels, doing showcases, showing them to people, making videos, and hearing labels go, well, you know, he's a white rapper and there's already Eminem. He's a white rapper, there's already Asher Roth or whoever. What are we going to do with this? We don't know. And I'm like, yo, but I know it's dope. So why should I sit here and wait for you to tell me it's dope when I could just say, all right, I already got an album worth of material. Why don't I just put it out?
Right.
And let people decide whether it's dope or not. No, do I think I'm going to sell a platinum record first time out the gate? No. But it makes no sense having an album worth of material waiting for an acceptance when you can put it out there and start movement. It's like saying, I'm capable of walking. I have to go from point A to point B. I'm just going to stand here for 7 years until a Porsche pulls up and takes me to where I got to go. Start walking.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Start walking. Because before that Porsche pulls up, you may end up at your destination.
Oh, man, I agree with you, man.
You know, and that's the whole point. That's just the whole point of the label.
Right. It's a good mission, man. I mean, just like you say, man, I've been waiting for years, man. You know, I remember on 89, 90, 91, CD burners were, you know, recorders were just starting to hit the scene. And, you know, I was like, gosh, man, if they do CDs, man, they're... Well, there may be a point where we can press and release our own CDs without sending out to a manufacturing company. Then CDs get out, and then MP3s come in, and then your CD distribution becomes on the internet. I was like, gosh, man, it could turn into like an online distribution. I really don't need a record label, man. If I got enough fan base and following, people are going to follow me. You know what I mean? So now we have the tools, we have the resources to really make moves and really make noise on our own now. So, yeah, it's a good mission statement, man. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, man. Yep. You know, that's... Especially now, man, you got iTunes out there, you got Napster, Rhapsody, Amazon, you can throw your stuff out there. Like, honestly, I can make $10 off of a record, and that's $10 more than I'd be making with it sitting in my computer just as a demo.
Definitely. So, man, yeah. For 2010, Kwame, what's on the agenda, man? What do you got scheduled coming up? Shows with your new artists, man, new production?
Well, definitely, yeah, Beyond Belief is always... somewhere doing shows and stuff like that. So we currently have a single out on him called Bigger Checks featuring the rapper Red Cafe. And you know, it's more like, I call it, it's more like an East Coast type New York record, but you gotta start a fan base somewhere. So he's from New York, so we're trying to just give that feel right now, just to get his own area behind him. And so that record is doing all right. Getting some good radio play on that record. As far as mainstream production, just dropped a single on a rapper on Atlantic Records named Mano. He's starting his second album, so this is the first single to his second album. It's called Bring It Back DJ. And after that, it's the same rapper, Red Cafe, that's with... Beyond Belief on his record. He has his own album coming out on Bad Boy, and I just finished the record with him and Nicki Minaj for his next single, working on Keisha Cole, Faith Evans, T.I., and those are like the people that I'm working on right now. You know, this is just the beginning of the year, so hopefully it'll quadruple by the end of the year.
Nice. Well, man, I do appreciate you, Kwame, for coming on the show and chopping it up with me, man. It's been a real pleasure, brother. I do appreciate it, man. You definitely got a spot.
Thanks for talking to me, man.
Oh, man, I'd love to have you back, man. Talk about your new endeavors, man. I appreciate that.
Cool. Anytime.
All right, well, you take it easy, man. Good luck with you, dude.
All right, man. You too, man.
All right.
Peace.
And a big shout out to Kwame, man, for coming on the show and chopping it up with me, man. You know, for me, it was a real pleasure talking to Kwame again, because I was a big fan of his back in the late 80s, early 90s, man. I mean, he really came out with his own style from a fashion point and from the music side, man. It was just both creative, it was original, and it was hot, man. And, you know, he definitely set a trend in that era, man. And, you know, at that point in time when music was really popping back in the late 80s and early 90s, man, I mean, that's really when I made the transition where I wanted to become a music producer full time, man. And it's because of guys like Kwame, Teddy Riley, Babyface, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. I mean, the guys that really were setting their mark, man, really bringing that sound in, really was a big inspiration in my life, man. So shout out again to Kwame, man, for talking to me, man, and sharing his expertise and knowledge. And he definitely has a spot here at the Producer's Corner, man. Would love to have him back. And for those of you that are listening and would like to contact me for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spud2tight@gmail.com. And for my past interviews and my current interviews, you can also hit my website up is www.spud2tightmusic.ning.com. And I'm also available under a podcast, the music podcast on iTunes for the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Tight. So if you have iTunes and you would like to listen to my shows on a podcast, it's available as a music podcast as well. So just type in the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Tight, click on the image, and you'll have access to the past shows and current shows. But before I go, man, I'm gonna let a track play out that Kwame produced for one of his artists that he's producing by the name of Beyond Belief. The title of the track is called Bigger Clean, and it also features another artist by the name of Red Cafe. The track is really hot, man. I wanted to share it with you guys, man, so you can get a feel what Kwame does as a producer and as artists. And so I'm going to let the track play out for the remainder of the show. And I want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening in. And until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Big into Big L Pun and Big Papa.
What else?
Big dreams to rock like Big Papa.
What else?
Big headed, big kids, big them up. Got a big chance, buzz wasn't big enough. Guess I ain't have a big enough presence. Big deal, I ain't learned a big enough lesson.
What else?
Big, no big rubber. Big labels watch me like Big Brother. They want a big cut, yeah, no thanks. Still I'm wishing I was big like Tom Hanks. Part of me is I stroke my big ego. Want the bigger checks, now I'm missing
big
checks. Now let it go.
Push a bigger Lex. I need cash or I smoke them like a cigarette. I'm on top, sitting up high on the roof. John Dillinger, the wrong guy on the loose. With the baby face, like John B. For bigger checks, I do schemes. Ponzi, the boy Izzard, dope pillar. Big boss, get the big check, gorilla. Beg your pardon, no parallel park.
What else?
I do ballet, the barrel still spark.
What else?
I'm the truth, the copyist try to carve it. The flow still be butter beyond the margin. I get the bigger checks, Tim's on killer sex. Cafe Patriot, I get Bella checks with the illa face. Ask K1, I want the paper, payday, payday, son.
Get the bigger checks, get the big check.
What else?
Get the big check.
What else?
Get the big check.
I just just want the paper. I just want the paper. I just want the paper. Six figure big check. I just want the paper. I just want the paper.
The $1 million car in the biggest house. Trying to be the biggest star with the biggest mouth. Lead the biggest rapper looking like the biggest slouch. Fill the biggest pipe glass full of Guinness stout. That's the flavor that my mouth savor. Trying to get this rap made or when I outcame. Get it? That's green when I blow up. I told myself I live my biggest dreams when I grow up.
Now let it go.
Get the biggest check.